return of your favorite technology gurus to answer your tech questions, both large and small. It seems that whenever our tech team is scheduled for a main calling program, something pretty big happens in tech news. In the past, we've discussed the launch of new iPhones, the Windows 10 operating system, and electric cars, to name a few. But nothing like yesterday's headlines. WikiLeaks yesterday released thousands of pages of documents, allegedly CIA documents, that describe sophisticated software used to hack into everything from common apps to Samsung television sets. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Main Calling, we will ask our tech team what this means for you. We'll also ask them questions without apparent national security implications, such as whether the new Nintendo game, Legend of Zelda: Breath of the Wild, is all it's cracked up to be. Main Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Main Calling. The news of the latest WikiLeaks dump of documents raises new privacy questions. Apparently, intelligence agencies have figured out how to tap into our smart devices, phones, TVs, and even cars to spy on people. Today we have our tech team with us, and we will get their thoughts on privacy in our digital age. We'll also talk about the latest iPhone rumors and a program Maine libraries are developing about media literacy. In the studio with me, Janet McKenney. She is Director of Library Development at the Maine State Library. Jared Maxfield is the owner of Necessary Technology. Andrew Rosenstein is the owner of Techport. As always, we want to hear from you. Are you in the market for a home assistant like a Google Home or Amazon Echo? How concerned are you about your privacy when it comes to your electronic device? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome to all of you. And of course, we have to start by talking about the WikiLeaks news. Jared, are you surprised?
I'm not. No, I'm not.
Janet, you?
No, I have no expectation of privacy.
Andrew?
No. I'm a bit surprised at how one-sided these data dumps tend to be. I'm a little, who's behind them? That's what kind of concerns me a little bit. And what's the purpose? Is it to sort of, most of what was released in terms of do-it-yourself instructions about hacking are beyond most capabilities of the average person. But eventually it's going to continue to get easier and easier to hack into different systems. And our best defense is a strong defense. So we have to just keep pushing forward for more encryption, for more levels of security, as much as a pain in the neck it can be sometimes, entering passwords and things like that. But, I mean, it is concerning.
Okay. Regular person, Jared, regular person who has a Samsung internet-connected television has just found out that conversations may or can be recorded. Are they being recorded?
Hopefully not. I mean, technically, this dump is about CIA documents, and their charter does not allow them to be spying directly in the homeland on U.S. citizens. So hopefully everybody is following the law. I mean, I'm totally conflicted on this, and I see both sides. You know, we have overreach of government sometimes, and we also have information that we have to protect because, like Andrew just mentioned, you know, your average person isn't going to read through these documents and all of a sudden become a super hacker. But we live in an ever rapidly changing environment and world, and, you know, these people that can look it over who are other governments and organizations and things like that, you know, they can see how we do things and, you know, our tax dollars do go to fund the CIA to do these. I mean, part of their job, actually, and that's why I'm not super surprised. I mean, between any decent Hollywood movie, which we've been seeing for years, and just the facts of what we've seen happen in the past, you know, they get into these things because their job is to collect intelligence and information on our behalf so that we can you know, essentially do things on behalf of our country or keep ourselves safe or protected. And the big question is always, where's the line between trading liberty for security? And it's a big question, and there's so many sides to it. But I'm not shocked, and I don't think a lot of people should. I say I'm kind of, you know, cheeky about it, but I say to my customers for years, I go, if you don't want it out there, don't put it on a device. You know, it's not just as much as a government or WikiLeaks or somebody hacking you, but just hackers, guys in their basement, you know, professional organizations now. It's a lot easier to rob people with a keyboard than it is with a gun. So it's all these things out there. It's an ever-changing world. So how to protect our data and stay safe, I don't have that answer. But for the rest of us, for Joe and Jay in America, I would hope that while we might not be totally enthralled with the fact that our devices are vulnerable, I would hope that those things aren't being used, you know, obviously against us or against our interests.
Janet, this morning you sent me a link to an article, which we are posting on our Maine Calling Facebook page. And the article is What WikiLeaks CIA Hack Means for You and Your Gadgets by Paul Wagensile. And it says allegation reality. And the allegation, the CIA knows how to hack into iPhones and Android phones, reality. Yes, of course it does. And then it says impact and what you can do. Unless you're a high value target, such as a terrorist, arms dealer, foreign politician or diplomat or, well, a spy, the CIA will probably not be interested in what's on your phone.
Yeah. So, you know, what I liked about that article was that, you know, everybody kind of overreacts. And I'm not saying we shouldn't overreact to this, but your personal vulnerability isn't really there. You know, I don't really have any expectation that the CIA is breaking into my phone. But it calls for a larger discussion among our culture. Technology changes at such a rapid pace, and our ethics and our laws are unable to keep up with this rapid pace. And, you know, we can hardly breathe in our everyday life. And how do we have thoughtful conversations going forward as to how, as a society, we deal with these rapid changes? And what do we really think about privacy? I think, you know, Jared was making a good point. Our taxes pay for the CIA. We have certain expectations. We kind of want them hacking the other guy, but maybe not us. And so it does. It requires a lot of thought. And I think it also requires us as a society and a culture to dedicate a certain amount of time to keep up to date and to learn. You know, if we're going to use technology in our lives, we have to be responsible and we have to be aware.
All right. Andrew, on a related note, you want to talk about something as simple as email, don't you?
Yes, yes. something we take long. It's always there. It's always working. But for many of us, we still have those accounts we started years ago when email was kind of new. And you might have an AOL account or Earthlink or even Yahoo. But many of those companies have just not kept up with security, and so they don't have two-step verification. There are lots of hackers out there who brag that how easy it is to get into an AOL account. A couple of weeks ago or last week, the vice president's wife, her email account was revealed by mistake, largely, because the but in papers that went out, and she suddenly received a lot of emails that she didn't want. but we're pretty vulnerable with AOL, especially.
Let me ask you this, because, you know, somebody listening to this might think, oh my gosh, what a pain to change my email account. Would you recommend for someone who really doesn't want to have to change their complete email account, and they have an AOL account, to maybe continue to use your AOL account to email friends, to receive the offers of coupons from the Macy's and the grocery store. But if you're doing anything serious, talking with an investment advisor, talking with a bank, have a separate, more secure email account for that.
Right. Yeah, that's a great idea. And it's also a great idea to have a transition period, have a six-month transition period. We sometimes all use those vacation responders that send an automatic email out. You can often customize those to send an automatic email that says, hey, I've moved, just like a change of address form. And when you respond to me, when I respond to you, you're going to get a Gmail address or an iCloud address. Gmail and iCloud are two of the safest email systems out there because they offer high-level password protection and two-step verification, meaning no one can get into that account unless they're you. And there are different ways to customize that, so you can always get in. But use that transition time to set up a new email account and let everybody know where you are.
Jared?
We go through this a lot with folks because people have their AOLs and their Earthlinks and their old email accounts, and sometimes they even come in with their head down in shame a little bit when they have to tell us an @AOL.com address. I always say to people, don't overcomplicate changing your email address. Andrew just mentioned you can set up a response, but I like to think of things in electronic ways of, you know, if you're thinking about files and how do I manage them on your computer, literally think in your brain about filing cabinets in an office. Think about physical things. When you physically move, what do? You go to the post office and you set up mail forwarding. So all of your mail for the next year goes to your new address automatically. The biggest concern that most folks I tend to find have is changing email is they feel like I'm going to miss all my mail and I have to tell everyone I know I have a new address. Every mail setting, AOL, Earthlink, Gmail, it doesn't matter who it is, has mail forwarding built into the settings. So if you have an AOL account, for example, or an account you want to transition off of, what we recommend to folks is just like Andrew said, you're going to have a transition period. But you could literally go and set up account number two, turn on forwarding for account number one, and then you don't have to check account number one anymore. You just check everything account number two. You're not going to miss any mail. You're not going to lose anything because it all gets forwarded. As it gets forwarded, you will then respond, and you're now responding from – we'll use Gmail as an example – from your new Gmail address. And a couple of things. You know, you could set up that autoresponder like Andrew mentioned. Maybe on the bottom of your email for a couple of months, just put, you know, a signature line that says, please note I've changed my main email address. But the other thing is, if you think about it, like with our phones, do we really know anyone's phone number anymore off the top of your head? You pretty much press their name or tell the phone to dial them. And if your battery's dead, a lot of people, I literally don't know that person's phone number. Same thing with email. If we start typing in an email address, I might just start to type in Jennifer, and my email program is going to automatically autofill the email address. So a lot of these email programs will start to notice automatically over time, you know, I'm getting a response back from Andrew, and it used to come from AOL, but now it keeps coming from this Gmail account. And a lot of times what you'll find is you don't really need the person themselves to even figure it out because their mail program, after enough responses, will say, hey, this seems like the more primary address and do it for you automatically. But don't overcomplicate it. It's just as simple as forwarding and doing a few of those small steps, and you can make the transition pretty easily.
On another topic, Janet, you have something pretty big to talk about, don't you? The libraries have a new ebook platform. What does that mean?
Well, we've transitioned from basically one vendor to another. This one's called the Cloud Library, and it's more app-driven. And so it's for more modern devices to read books on. And there were a wide variety of reasons why we transitioned. And one of the biggest ones was to allow more schools to participate in the program because the previous vendor wouldn't allow us to have a statewide system that included the schools.
This includes all the schools and all the libraries,
yes,
in the state of Maine.
Exactly. Any school, public, or academic library that's in Maine can participate in this. And so, you know, funding through the state library, Maine InfoNet, and then the libraries themselves self-fund it too. So
what does this mean? If I've never used a library for an ebook, do I go to the library with my Kindle under my arm? What do I do?
Well, you need a library card. So if you have a library card, you don't even have to go into the library. If you don't have a library card, go and get a library card, and you can talk to the library. Not every single library participates in Maine. And so, you know, the Kindle thing is the issue. It depends on what kind of Kindle you have. You know, the paper whites and the glows, you can't put an app on them. So this new platform doesn't work on those. And we did a lot of research to find out the larger percentage of people utilizing our previous system. And, you know, we do have some unhappy people that, you know, their particular Kindle reader, I have one myself, but I also have an iPhone and an iPad, and so I can put the apps on there. I will tell you the difference. When I initially set up the old system, it took like an hour to do all the authentication. I had to set up an Adobe account and all this. This new one, download the app, install, put in your library card number, and I was ready to go in less than 2 minutes. So,
I know there used to be an issue, and this is used to, about 8 years ago, I think I had a conversation about how libraries would buy ebooks like they bought regular books. You'd only have two, maybe, of a book. And if both were checked out, the third person couldn't download it. Is that still the case?
It's still the case for most publishers. It's a publisher by publisher determination on how they manage digital rights content for a different book. So that's the real challenge. And one of the reasons why, you know, we have to use, we're using Biblioteca for the cloud library. And, It's basically because publisher number one will allow you to, you know, buy a book for X amount of money and you can circulate it X amount of time, or unlimited circulations, but you have to pay a really high price for it. And so there's actually quite a bit of work behind the scenes managing that. One of the new things is, because of the lower costs of this, we're actually going to be able to expand the amount of books that are in the e-library. And that was the second, you know, the second choice as far as keeping up with the technology changes, making it available to the schools, but also lowering some of the costs so that we can actually have a more robust library.
Okay, well, I know there are a lot of things you guys would like to talk about, including The Legend of Zelda, Alexa on Amazon, but we do have to take a break, and we're going to take your calls and questions as well when we come back. The phone number, 1-800-399-3566, email talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do the Maine Association of Nonprofits, uniting and strengthening the nonprofit sectors through management training and advocacy. NonprofitMaine.org and Cancer Care Center, Sanford, York County's only radiation center with the newest technology in Maine. CancerCareYorkCounty.org.
LOL.
What happens?
Let's do...
when technology starts to change our language.
Lol, let's do this interview via text. Lol.
It would take us like forever to do this by text.
Oh, lol.
I'm Guy Raz, spoken and unspoken, stories from the frontiers of human communication. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Join us for the TED Radio Hour coming up tonight at 11 o'clock.
As her father's memory slips away, the author Keggy Carew tries to find out how much of her father's fabulous war stories were real.
The truth was so much more outrageous, and he was so much more a kind of crucial part of history.
I'm Ari Shapiro, a tale of a man's adventurous past and his humbling last years in a book called Dadland, this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Join us this afternoon for All Things Considered with Nora Flaherty from 4 to 6:30 each weekday evening.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, the return of our tech team. In the studio with me, Jared Maxfield, the owner of Necessary Technology, Janet McKenney, director of library development at the Maine State Library, and Andrew Rosenstein, the owner of Techport. We invite you to join the conversation. 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. during the break talking about that everything we need to talk about. But we'll go to a couple calls and emails first. Email from Jan. If I don't have a smart device, can my iPad, iPhone, or MacBook be used for listening? I think she's going back to the beginning in the WikiLeaks leak. An iPad, iPhone, or MacBook is a smart device, isn't it?
It is. And conveniently, yesterday, Apple updated their iOS, with which is the operating system used by the iPad and the iPhone, which does close any of these security holes that WikiLeaks flagged. And Apple does that very frequently. They're very responsive, which means that it's up to you to update that device as often as possible, and or set it to automatically update, which you can do on all your Apple devices. So you'll be running secure software, and but it's very – because of the way that Apple operating system is built, it's very difficult to hack that system and to listen in on people's conversations.
Okay, we're going to go to Carrie, who's calling from Northeast Harbor. Hi, Carrie. Go ahead.
Hello. Thank you very much. I have a question about the cloud library systems, because I have started using it, and I've run into some concerns. The first one had to do with login, and that's the number of steps that are required to go through, where you have to go through a drop-down for country, then a drop-down for state, and then finally, you get to a drop down for city and can start to look for your own library. And that's a marked contrast compared to the previous system for OverDrive. Another concern has been that in order to maintain my checked out books in Cloud Library on my system, I have to stay logged into my account. And I'm in the habit of logging out of apps like that for security purposes when I'm not using them, and I've been doing that frequently with the OverDrive, and I was a little surprised when I logged out of Cloud's library and discovered that all my downloaded books had gone back to the electronic storage system and had to download them again. They were all sitting there in the account, but they just weren't sitting on my device like they used to with Cloud Library, other one.
Janet?
So as far as the login thing, it sounds like you're probably not saving the login credentials that you need to save. So I know on my phone, you know, when I go in, I don't have to go through that process. That was the initial process. So I'm not sure what kind of device you're reading the books on, and whether they're audiobooks or whether they're just regular ebooks or not. What I would do, you know, if you want to email me at the state library, what I can do is I can get somebody at Maine InfoNet or get our wonderful technology consultant to, you know, dig into those specific issues for you. You know, what I would say is, you know, we're setting everything up right now. You know, it's just launched. And so part of it is just that initial working with the vendor so that it's as easy a system as possible. And a lot of this happened with the original, with OverDrive as well. So, you know, I'm sorry that you're experiencing some stuff, but I think you'll see that it settles down, you know, once we've made the transition fully.
Okay, so I will kind of wait and see for the improvements. You know, I have been concerned about leaving accounts open from a security standpoint, and I also never use autofill on any of my login or, you know, say passwords or anything that about like that. Again, concerned from a security standpoint.
So, you know, I'm janet.mckenney@maine.gov, and feel free to email me, and, you know, I'll have Jared or somebody at Maine InfoNet, you know, look into those questions for you. How about
Great.
That? Okay.
Thank you very much.
Good luck,
much.
Carrie. Thanks. We're going to go to Scarborough and Mike. Hi, Mike. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi, Jennifer. Great program as always. Yeah, so I heard you mention earlier, you know, when communicating with a financial advisor, you know, with respect to email security. I am a financial advisor. So I guess what I would encourage people to think about email, think about it like a postcard. So that think about anything in your email is viewable by somebody. And so at least with respect to confidential information, account numbers, definitely Social Security numbers, or if you're attaching an account statement, I wouldn't do that through email. Most financial advisors have secure ways to transfer information, whether it's a file or just data. I use a secure client portal, so my clients can log in and upload statements if they need to send me information. And most advisors have a system like that, or they use a secure file transfer system. So.
Okay, great, Mike. As you're talking, our guests are nodding. So thank you for your call. I appreciate it.
Well, that's good
advice.
The important thing too that as consumers whose information is vulnerable, we've got to stand up and demand that kind of level of security. If you're, I was speaking to somebody at a who had accounts at a small bank, and they were having a terrible time getting their own bank statements because. The website for the bank was not maintained and didn't have high enough levels of security. So that's the kind of thing that we really have to ask for as consumers. If your bank or credit union or financial advisor doesn't have this, you've got to ask for it.
Yeah, absolutely. If your advisor doesn't have a secure way to transfer files, you need to figure something out because email is not a secure way to do it.
Flip side of this is random, but you know the flip side of that is we've been seeing customers more over the last year who are coming in and their bank or financial service is requiring them to get service from us to basically sign off and get their machine cleaned, especially some of the local credit unions and things, because essentially the reverse of what we're talking about, it's not only the banks that can be the vulnerability or maybe something's not up to date, but also especially specifically financial institutions are seeing individual infected or affected computers from the consumer, their customer, be corrupted in a way or their data was compromised or account was hacked or something like that. And they're actually requiring before they allow that customer re-entry into their system to access their account to actually basically – you know, have their machine cleaned and checked over or something like that. And literally we have to provide them with a write-up. So it's on both ends, but what this gentleman brought up is completely accurate. And that's how one of my banks works. You don't get an email, you get a email to a login that you then securely log into their system to view your correspondence.
Yeah. Mike, thanks for your call. We have an email from Mark. What's the difference between the iPhone Messenger app and the Android app? Is it true, as I believe Apple claims, that its Messenger app is more secure when texting between iPhones than when texting between Android devices or from an iPhone to an Android phone? Also, can one turn off the delivered notification in Messenger?
Well, What you're looking for in a messaging app is end-to-end encryption. That means that the message you send is encrypted and the person who receives it has a way to de-encrypt it. So that means it's safe and secure. There, at a basic level, iMessenger by Apple on Apple phones is one of those systems. You've got more advanced systems like WhatsApp or especially an app called Signal. And there's also I wish I could have found it, but there's an app that's being used by people in the White House to communicate securely with each other.
Twitter?
Yes.
Sorry, that
most
was
likely.
Easy.
funny, we can all read that. I don't know if they know that yet. But it is important. I don't really know much about the Android messaging system because I don't use it. But when you get that green bubble from Apple, you know that you're in the Apple messaging world when you're communicating blue to blue. That's the signal. And when you get a response or you send a message and it's coded in a green bubble, that means that you're sending it to a user who does not have an iPhone.
In general, we find that – and such as it's – Android systems are much less secure than the Apple environment, especially based on the fact that right off the bat, when it comes to apps, Apple is very intense about approving and reviewing things before they can go in the App Store. The Android store is more of a wild market where a lot of people can put things up. If you do your research and find, especially about malicious apps, you're going to find those primarily on Android devices. We do recommend to folks, they make antivirus and anti-malware programs to run on Android phones and tablets. Think of your Android as almost a Windows machine. People clean up a lot of viruses and malicious software on Windows machines at a far higher rate than they do on Macs. So keep that in mind. Outside of the specifics to the messaging, there are definitely higher security risks running an Android-based device as opposed to an Apple-based device.
Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. We have the tech team in the studio with us today. Our email is talk@mainpublic.org. You can tweet, speaking of tweeting, @MainCalling, or post to our Facebook page. Janet, I know you wanted to talk about some of the work that the libraries are doing to develop programs about media literacy. What's going on?
Well, I think the entire library world nationally, is looking at ways to combat fake news. And, you know, at the heart of it is media literacy. How do we determine bias? How do we determine reliability? How are we confident in what we're reading, you know, is true, and how people define truth? And so, you know, libraries nationally, you know, and locally are looking at that. So, you know, they had a program in Cape Elizabeth recently at the library there from a newsman who was talking about it. But, you know, it goes more into, you know, being informed and looking at where you do get your news. And
yeah, a couple months ago, we did a program on Main Calling about fake news. And someone called to share with us that the Bowdoin College Library was developing some information. We shared that information on our Facebook page, one of the most looked at and shared links that we've done at Main Calling. So we'll try to see if we can dig that up again and repost that. A couple other things I know you guys wanted to talk about. Andrew, what is OLED screen manufacturing and what does it mean for the future? Is it OLED? Do people say OLED or OLED or is it OLED?
Well, I've heard it both ways, but it is that new that we haven't settled on basically it's a way to manufacture LCD, what we know as LCD or LED phone screens, in a way that's extremely thin, and they can be manufactured with a small curve to them, so that you may see in future phones, although Samsung has come out with phones that have a curved screen, it's not a true OLED screen. But in the future, there's some speculation that the iPhone 8 may make use of this. Sharp Electronics is one of the leading manufacturers, and they've just invested 1 trillion yen, which translates as about $850 million, into technology that should see this manufacturer as less expensive and
why do we want a curved screen? Because it fits better in our back pocket?
It may possibly. Well, it's mainly to provide a true wide image on the phone. The screens most likely won't have the kind of curve that you can sit on. That's a do-it-yourself trick if you sit on your phone. Screens will be less expensive to manufacture. Probably means more money for the phone manufacturers rather than cheaper prices.
I was going to say prices aren't going to come down.
But it is a big advancement in technology, and it allows electronics manufacturers to put screens everywhere because they can be very small and the resolution is very high.
Someone had a bendable phone I saw. We'll fold them up and put it in your pocket before you know, and then 10 years we'll just put it right in your eyeball. So. It's getting
10 small. Years? Is that far from now?
Well, yeah. The most exciting advance is actually in batteries. It was announced the other day that the original lithium-ion battery that we've all come to love and hate in our phones and all of our devices. The inventor of that invented a battery that's also a high-capacity battery that might have three times the battery life and recharge fully in a very short time. And it can also be manufactured in different configurations so that we can, again, make phones thinner and smaller.
Wow.
That won't blow up and
yes,
light
it's,
on fire.
It's, non, it's a non-flammable battery. Will not blow up.
We do have to take another quick break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Evergreen Home Performance, offering energy-efficient windows and insulation to help homeowners achieve year-round comfort. More at evergreenyourhome.com.
Climate One is changing the conversation about energy, economy, and the environment. Moments after President Trump was inaugurated, the White House website removed all references to climate change. But not all Republicans are in climate denial. On our next program, we'll hear from some renegades on the right who find climate solutions in conservative principles. Join our host Greg Dalton for the next Climate One.
Tune in to Climate One coming up just after Maine Calling today at 2 o'clock.
On the next Fresh Air, my guest will be Mohsen Hamid, who has written a timely novel about knowing when it's time to flee your country and what happens when you do and become an immigrant in another country that is hostile to immigrants. Hamid lives in Lahore, Pakistan, but spent part of his childhood in California, where his father was studying. He's also lived in New York and London. Join us.
Tune in to Fresh Air tonight at 7 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling today on the program, The World of High Tech. In the studio with me, Andrew Rosenstein, who's the owner of TechFort. Jared Maxfield is the owner of Necessary Technology. And Janet McKenney is the director of library development at the Maine State Library. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Here's an email from Sarah. I am single but have many close friends. However, there is no one in my life currently that I share my passwords or even the variety of accounts I have with various financial institutions such as my credit union, retirement account, rainy day fund, etc. For all of these accounts, I have opted to go paperless. How would my heirs and beneficiaries find out about these accounts in the event of my death or something else happening that would make me unable to communicate?
It should be in your will.
Yeah, definitely.
In your safe deposit box.
Okay.
And someone should know about that. But yeah, these days that should be part of your estate and will planning. Passwords.
And here's an email from John. I have an iPhone 5S. Like most folks, I've become quite dependent on it. I'm leaving next week for 1 month in Europe. Help! My carrier does not offer international service, but has told me the phone is unlocked for international use. So what do I do when I land in Germany? Do I shop for a SIM, whatever that is? What kind? Will it work in all of Europe? I'd like my contacts to be able to reach me as normal with my same number of messages and WhatsApp. Is this possible? Also, I'd like to use the phone for navigation, local calls, and messaging within Europe. Will this phone do that? Will other applications work there if I'm connected to Wi-Fi? John, you are not the only person with these questions. Mm. Who wants to start? Andrew.
You've got a lot that you're planning on doing. I think that you can certainly buy a SIM card. Europeans are a little bit more savvy when it comes to phone use and trading SIM cards and things like that. It's a little bit easier. It's more common to be able to find those locally. You get a number. You get the other option too that sounds like it may work for you in a more reasonable way is depending on your carrier. AT&T recently announced that they were discounting international rates very heavily, so it may not be a bad idea just to keep your number, keep everything about your phone, and go to your carrier and say, "Look, hey, you give me a deal. I'm going to Europe. And give me the best rate you can." So that way you don't have to inform people of your new number and everything works as it should.
Yeah, I would deal with it before you leave. I agree with Andrew. Last time I traveled, a lot of times you'll call your carrier because I don't have an international plan, but you basically activate it. And then when you get back, you deactivate it. That's going to help in terms of knowing, A, what types of services you'll be able to support there, because I'll be able to tell you ahead of time. You may or may not need to swap out the SIM card. Typically, if you have, especially like with AT&T, if you have an account, they're not going to charge you for a SIM card. But I would try and just upgrade my account or go to a prepaid carrier from the States that will allow me to do that here. Swap out the SIM card. The SIM card is literally on your iPhone. It's a pretty much use a paperclip to open up the thing, swap out your SIM card. But I would deal with that here. And in terms of keeping people so they can call your number, if you can get your carrier to do it, you're going to keep the same number. If you did have to get another carrier or something set up for that meantime, then at least if you do it here, then you could auto-forward your current number to that and whatever your new temporary number is before you go. But I would probably – that's a lot of things in that email. You sound concerned. So I would probably deal with it before you get on the plane as opposed to trying to pick something up when you get there.
And in my experience, the folks who work at the actual stores, John, if you're able to drive to whether it's your AT&T store, your U.S. Cellular store, whatever carrier you have, these generally are pretty bright young people who can help you and help explain it, in a way that people like me can understand.
Rather than going like through the website and trying to figure it out on your own, make that telephone call or take that extra step, because it's really easy to, you know, make a mistake and assume you have everything in hand and get there and it doesn't work.
And the cell phone company, they become a lot more, I mean, there's kind of a new round of cell phone wars going on. You're seeing unlimited data plans pop back up. So it's not like the old days where if you change your account, you're locked into some one-year contract and can't get out. They're pretty flexible while kind of letting you a la carte your account for changes like that.
Okay, so I'm going to go up to Hollowell and Lori. Hi, Lori. Go ahead.
Hi there. This message is for Janet. The question is for Janet. I do have a Paperwhite, and I used Overdrive actually constantly. I have I've had cancer and a transplant, and I have a disease from my transplant. So I do have an iPad Mini, but it's very difficult for me to read on, and so I do use my Paperwhite all the time. So I must say that I am a bit disappointed that I can't use my Paperwhite, and I know that it has to do with the format, which is EPUB. I guess you guys use EPUB. So my first question is, do you know if in the future somehow this is going to be rectified? And also, I have a wish list. I had a wish list on Overdrive, but I didn't see that it was carried over onto the Cloud Library, and I also didn't see a wish list area even on the Cloud Library to form a new wish list to keep, you know, to keep track of books I want to read. So I don't know if I missed that or if that's something that's going to be added as well.
I think the wish list is going to be added. I know that, you know, Maine InfoNet's talking to the Cloud Library people. So, you know, we're still in that transition. You know, I'm really sympathetic. I do most of my reading on my Paperwhite as well. And, you know, I've just kind of as technology changes and we go forward, you know, it's, you know, we tend to like lose something. You know, one of the things that, you know, we are talking to people about is, you know, being able to get a low cost, you know, Android tablet or, you know, something that's as light so that it makes, you know, the reading easier. It's, you know, it's just one of those things as far as us trying to balance, you know, the needs, the costs, and providing as much access as possible. I think some of the other libraries, you know, because of this particular issue in transitioning, some of them are considering having a separate Overdrive account and actually offering up two different platforms, a statewide one. So there's nothing stopping the library that you're getting those services from investing in just a single Overdrive license. You know, A lot of other states and a lot of other libraries, the libraries themselves provide these services, and they determine who it is. In Maine, we always try to buy things and do things statewide consortially because we're such a low population state, and it makes sense to lower the costs for all of our libraries. It's not the best solution, you know, but, you know, just as we might have, you know, different kind of cable packages, and I have like multiple kinds of devices, you know, so that's another way to go. So, you know, maybe your library can kind of consider that if there are a significant number of people that are still using the Paperwhite and want to continue to use it.
And Lori and Janet, we have an email from Dennis, and he says, I heard you mention the Paperwhite Kindle cannot be used with the new ebook system. Which Kindles can be used with the new system?
Like the Kindle Fire, anything that you can put an app on is what will work. So it's, you know, the Kindle Fire is going back to, I think, every version. I'm not sure about the very, very first one.
Okay. Thanks, Lori, for your call. A few more calls. But, Jared, I really want to talk about the subject you want to talk about, which is Alexa. What's latest with these sort of home devices that are going to control our lives someday?
She's back and she's listening. Someone had mentioned in a couple shows ago when we were talking about the Amazon Echo, a.k.a. Alexa, that we've beat the horse on. But that is a device that's a smart device in your home where you can play music or control lights or do lots of things. Kind of like a little personal assistant. And someone had asked recently if you could use it essentially as a two-way communication device. And we'd said no, maybe down the road. And down the road has come quicker than we think because Amazon, there's now articles out there and rumors essentially that they are working on. And whether it's going to be a new actual piece of hardware or just an upgrade to the current ones we have, allowing them to be used as some sort of two-way communication device, whether that means only between Alexas or you can actually make a traditional phone call from them. But that seems to be the way they're going. Google Home has come on real fast. Echo was out for a while, and now if you turn on the TV or you know you see Google Home everywhere, which is their version. So it's now Pepsi and Coke. They're just going back and forth, and I think over the next year we're going to see both of those devices come out with some pretty awesome features to you know, basically make them more attractive and want people to get them. And you know, are they listening or not? I still don't know that, but they are convenient and fun to use. So
we have an email from Lynn. I have a Mac Mini equipped with Kaspersky Security and a Gmail account. Should I not have Google save any of my passwords?
Well, no, I think you should continue to have Google save your passwords because as those passwords are saved off the Mac, as long as you have a secure password to – and you can also encrypt your Mac as well. I'm not so sure that Kaspersky antivirus software is – the best way to go because it can slow things down a little bit. My approach is that, look, there are very few viruses that bother Macs. There's lots of malware, but that's something that the user has to stay on top of. But Apple's very good about security updates. And if you're not running antivirus software on a Mac, I wouldn't worry too much about it as long as you continually update. But if you have passwords on your Mac, you need to secure your Mac with a clever password that you don't forget and encrypt your Mac as well. Macs offer encryption. So if the drive is removed, it cannot be read without your password.
Okay. I think we have time for another question. We'll go to Jennifer in Portland. Hi, Jennifer. Go ahead.
Hi. This is a little bit of a different question, but some of the components of these smartphones are sourced from mines that are terribly harmful to the environment and the communities around them. And I just wondered if there's anything done to better source these minerals or find alternative sources that aren't as destructive or even just caring for the communities better so people are better paid and, you know, it's not such a terrible situation. That's all. Take my call off air. Thank you for answering.
It's going to take a technology change and B, social change. You know, I don't want to get to be Debbie Downer here, but, you know, we don't think about a lot in here in the States. You know, we get all these devices and we get all this technology, and we don't really think much about who's making it, where they're making it, where the minerals are coming from. You know, some of these rare earth minerals, one of the highest concentrations is, you know, in China. They have a huge control over some of these things. Apple factories literally have nets around them because the environment for some of that, you know, kind of assembly line of just constructing phones for people around the world to buy, literally pushes people to the brink. So that's a great thought and something we need to think about. But especially to get rid of the specific minerals and things that are harmful, it's going to take a technology change. But as we see, I mean, things are changing at a rapid rate.
Michael in Portland, we have time for you. If you can ask your question quickly, please. Thank you.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just had a couple of comments about the cloud library. I think other people have commented. I joined the call late, so I wasn't sure of all the comments that were out there. But I have a Paperwhite and have used it since they first came out and, of course, can't use it anymore with the infinite library. Those of you out there who also have Paperwhites, I think you join me in the consensus that it is by far the best e-reader there is, mostly due to the fact that it does not have light shining in your eyes like any tablet does. So I can't use that. I do have a Kindle Fire, so I can download the app and use it there, but I have light shining in my eyes. There's the nightshade mode that is okay. It's not great for reading. But then I found that using the Cloud Library app is just very weak, to be honest with you. You can't change your font. You can't change your spacing. You can change your margins.
Okay, Michael, because we're almost out of time, I'm going to give Janet a chance to respond. Go ahead.
Thank you.
Well, there are ways to change the font and everything. I think people are just learning that, you know, you have to navigate a little better. I've seen that about the fonts, but I've also seen stuff on the library listserv of how to do it. So I know we're developing a more robust user guide that goes into more detail than the one that's provided by Biblioteca. So, you know, if you can be a little bit patient with that. And, you know, I do understand. I moved from the Paperwhite to the Glow, so I still have that light, but I can kind of adjust it. But, you know, again, it's just moving forward with the technology and trying to find the best statewide solution. It doesn't stop any library from providing another solution.
Michael, thanks for your call. And that is going to be the last call, the last question today. Janet McKenney, thank you for being here. Janet is Director of Library Development at the Maine State Library. Jared Maxfield, the owner of Necessary Technology. Andrew Rosenstein, the owner of TechPort. We'll have to talk about Zelda next time, Janet. Jonathan Woodward ran the board today. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow, a neuroscientist who specializes in emotions in the brain. I'm Jennifer Rooks. This is Maine Public Radio.